And it's not live, so if you feel like you misstep or you stumble or something, just you can start over. We'll do a pickup. It'll be fine.
Okay.
No pressure.
There's always pressure.
Oh, there's no pressure, not with me. And besides, it's Friday, right? It's a beautiful Friday, no pressure.
Okay.
And first of all, I'm going to start with the easy stuff. My tape is rolling now. Let me get you to say your name and your title so I can check the levels and make sure the levels are good.
My name is Dan Healy. I'm the Chief Information Officer for the Alaska Regional Office of the National Park Service.
Now, when we transcribe this for the web, do you prefer Dan or Daniel?
Dan.
Dan. And Healy is H-E-A-L-E-Y, correct?
Correct.
Okay, super. And we're talking about the Alaska, I want to get the name right, the Alaska IT radio team. You
yes.
just received the AFEA's Civilian Team of the Year Award. First of all, I want to know exactly what it is your team does, the Alaska IT radio team. What is it you do?
Our team is in the Alaska Regional Office for the Park Service, and we do information technology work for most of the parks up here, the majority of them up here, and we work with the IT infrastructure across the state and in the region. The radio program also is part of our team, and they do a lot of mountaintop transmitting, handheld radios, law enforcement type stuff, mobile radios, all of those types of things.
And so you got this award based on cost savings to the government. You were able to integrate technology to save money for the feds.
That's correct. Did you want to run down some of the things that we did?
Absolutely.
Okay. To begin with, we started off with, we have in IT, we had to build, when we got here, there was a lot of investment of connections with data circuits around the state that were a couple here, a couple there. It wasn't really an organized design. So the first thing we needed to do was build an infrastructure for all of the data transmission. Because it was a building block or a foundation for all the building blocks of all the things we would do past that. We started with, when we looked at the first portion of how the network was developed, we were currently paying $44,000 a month for that, and it's very expensive up here because of where we are.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our connections are satellite connections. We don't have the same cost structure as you folks in the lower 48 have. You tend to get better deals than we do up here. So what we did was redesign the network, and when we finished, we were able to increase the bandwidth of the networks to all of the parks and all of the park areas that we deal with by 10 to 15 times. When we got done with the new design, the monthly service cost of that new design was $21,000 a month.
So we
immediately dropped our billing by $23,000 a month on the new system.
That's a month.
That's a month, right? And this is forever. So these are the cost savings that keep on giving.
Now, is this a scenario where it just took somebody like yourself and like your team to sit down and kind of parse it out, or did the technology have to catch up with the need so that you would be able to see these cost savings? How'd you pull it off?
I think a little bit of both, but mostly the team sat down and as is the case with a lot of IT type of infrastructures, they tend to evolve as opposed to them being designed in the, you know, from the get-go. And this was just sitting down with the FTS contracts and redesigning, if you will, or getting that whole package together as one single picture, as opposed to a lot of entities that continually needed requirement. We just sort of packaged it and looked at it holistically and said, okay, well, let's look at the federal FTS contracts. How can we best optimize the contract options holistically by looking at everything we do here and where we think we want to go with all of the technology in front of us? So to answer your question, and not to be evasive, it's a little bit of each.
Well, that's not evasive at all. That's the answer. And one of the programs that's connected to this award, I understand, is video conferencing and improving that video conferencing. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, we had, when we started, it was kind of an odd duck kind of thing here. We did not get it to do video conferencing. Up here, we have a lot of remote area parks, and in order to train our folks, we have a satellite system, in I believe it's in Virginia somewhere, what we call our NCTC, which is our training center down there. They broadcast training to all of the park employees. And the problem up here in Alaska, being up at the top of the earth here, the satellite reception is most of our dishes are pointed almost horizontally.
Oh yeah.
And we don't, with the mountain range up here, we don't get very good reception. So the actual training that was being delivered to our folks and the remote folks need it more than anybody else, really, because they don't have opportunities to get in too much. We had to find another way to provide it because we had about maybe less than 30% of our parks could actually get that training. The satellite signal just wouldn't run up here. So we developed a video conference connection over the network that we just finished redesigning and put all of it on IP as opposed to, which is an internet protocol we use, and ran it across the network to get it to Anchorage so we could get it off the satellite. At that point, we put video systems at the parks to provide interactive training. And once we did that, we were able to cover 100% of our employees in the education piece. All of the video conferencing capability came after that when people started to realize we didn't have to be flying into Anchorage all the time to have meetings. We could do it on this system. And it kind of grew from there. But it originally was designed for the training issue.
So it actually helps make what is a very remote location a little less remote. You're able to make the world a little bit smaller.
Yes, we can. And it's interactive so they can talk with instructors. And if an instructor is putting on a seminar in Virginia, our system allows complete interactivity where the folks out in, let's say, Nome can actually converse with them while the training session is going on.
What about microwave communications using solar or wind or cell power? How does that work?
Well, we have some remote parks, and then there's parts of those parks that get even more remote, and they're off the grid totally. They're out in the middle of the wilderness. One of them is the Brooks Camp at Katmai National Park. And out there, the only communication the folks, the park headquarters, let's start with, is in King Salmon, Alaska, which is kind of a remote area. When you get to the park headquarters, 35 to 40 miles into the wilderness from there is Brooks Camp, which is where the bear viewing platforms are. And I don't know if you've ever seen a picture of the bears on that little, it's one of the most photographed pictures in the world, really.
Huh.
Where they're standing on that little waterfall catching salmon in their mouth.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Okay. That's at the Brooks Camp at Katmai National Park. That's one of those locations. And to get the systems, automation systems out there to work, we had to put mountaintop repeaters in. And again, we're off the grid. So what we designed was a system where we'll use wind, solar, and battery to run the transmitters at the top of the mountains. And we actually brought in what we call bear cam, which is we now are feeding a live feed of those bears out there, which has never been done before. And by utilizing green power all the way out, we have video of the bears in their habitat, which we run constantly when they're out there on the salmon runs. We also developed or worked with a company in New Jersey that developed what's called a suitcase size fuel cell. And that with the battery, with the solar power and the wind power gives us enough energy to run the camera for the whole season out there at the falls.
As you go through this process and as you learn how to put these sorts of things together, and of course you've won this award because of it, I'm wondering, can other agencies learn from what you've learned? What are some things that you would tell others who may want to pull this off as well and save money for the federal government through these communication systems? What are some of the best practices that you've come up with and lessons learned?
I think probably working with, I'd like to start by answering or starting with that question with one of the things that we have a tremendous advantage of up here is that with the National Park Service in Alaska, our management has been enormously supportive funding-wise for us to build these systems, which enables us to come back and say, look, here's the cost efficiencies we can get by doing this. But the money up front from the management is a major hurdle for most folks, and we understand that. So that's the first one is you need to, I guess if you try to build a basic infrastructure to develop these efficiencies, you have to produce for the money that you're given. But you got to be able to have management to support it, to give you the starting, to let you out of the gate first to start to do this kind of thing. I would say best practices, probably looking, most of the IT system, and I don't mean this government-wide, but in general, a lot of the ones that I have looked at, and I've been in three other agencies before I got here, we tend to evolve systems based on somebody needed something, and we added and we added and we added, and before you know it, that causes enormous costs, that, and a lot of it's hidden.
Mm-hmm.
Taking those, looking at it holistically, and then trying to package the whole thing as an entity, and working with the federal contracts that we have available, that's probably the best way to cut costs. That I could probably give anybody advice on as a best practice is go back and look at it as a single entity rather than a bunch of pieces that continually need more things. The other thing we've done is we've optimized new types of technology. One of them is called network accelerators. Up here in Alaska, again, we're a little bit unique that we're not dealing with cloud computing up here because our infrastructure with the local vendors just isn't there to support it. But we take, let's say, a circuit between us and Fairbanks, which we pay a certain amount of money for a month. Normally, if you had more traffic or a lot more business coming out of there, you would add another one or two circuits to keep up with the demand. What we have found is there are companies who build, we'll say, magic boxes for me not to have to get too technical with it, and you put a box at each end of that circuit, you're able to get two or three times the throughput on that circuit for a single investment rather than tripling your monthly recurring costs. So those are, if I had advice to give anybody, monthly recurring costs are things that really, really get expensive. And the focus we normally do is we look at those types of costs and say, are there other ways to do this? And there usually is. It takes a lot of research. We have to play around with different technologies to see if they're valid. But when we find them and they are, the cost savings are huge.
That's terrific stuff. Is there anything else about this you'd like to add?
Only that I got probably one of the, that's the other magic formula here. I probably got one of the best teams that I've ever worked with in my career, and I've got 26 years in. So the folks that work for me that do this sort of work and are very committed to that end result, that makes all the difference in the world as well.